started. So today, to start off, we've got Andrew and David. They're going to be talking about GTK plusing GNOME applications and how to make them totally rad in a variety of languages. So it's going to be an interactive session. It should be pretty cool. Andrew and David, all yours. Have fun.
So for myself, to get started, all I have to say to the camera is one thing. This is for the people in the room. It's for all of you watching at home. That's just too bad. Right. As far as I'm concerned, this is to be a very highly interactive session. We're going to be hopping back and forth between David and I. We're going to be showing a lot of code. Hopefully you'll be able to see the screen. If you're sitting in the back and you can't see, you've got two options. You can get up and move to front, or you can complain and we'll see about getting better, bigger font sizes or whatnot. But, you know, there are lots of seats up here and I do encourage you to take advantage. The camera guys asked for a film change of like 45 minutes or something, so we can certainly, you get a chance to just get the heck out of this room and get a breather. Because I know that when I was in university, sitting in a room like this for more than 42 minutes, I was out! And I have no qualms about accepting the fact that you guys will all be out at the 42 minute mark as well. So if anybody's still awake at the 50 minute mark, then that's pretty cool.
I think that pretty much covers it.
Yeah. So who the heck are we? You're going to introduce me and I'm going to introduce you.
Okay. Andrew Cowie is a management consultant. He apparently, when did you start Ripple? 1997. He's Canadian, from Toronto. And he's all in all a pretty good guy. If you want to know anything about Java, you've got to ask him, because seriously, you watch him write Java, it's like magic.
So David is a long-time GNOME contributor. He is the one that you can blame for any applets in your GNOME desktop that aren't working.
They all work.
And the rest are features, not bugs. David actually works for, of all things, a seismic imaging firm. And one of the really cool things is that they write develop an enormous number of in-house GTK applications to help take the data that they've modeled and processed in order to analyze it. And David is largely responsible for them being a GTK shop, and they use everything from C to Python to do some really, really rad stuff. And later in the talk today, I'm sure to tell you about some of the custom things that they've done. One final personal note. I can hear myself pretty hot here through this microphone. Can you hear me okay now? If I'm glaring at you in the front, then we'll work on the AV results. As a personal note, you guys have invested a lot to choose this room over all the others. I can let your mind rest at one thing. Rasmus Next Door is a talk that you go and download the slides. Because I saw it in India, it's a great talk, but actually the content of it really is in the slides. So don't feel bad about missing it. On their hand, if you want to walk right off and see Kim Weatherall talk about legal stuff, no problem. But I do appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to come and visit with us this morning. And this is the guarantee I give to anyone in a tutorial, anywhere in the world, when I give them, be them on management operations topics or stuff like this, is at the end of this, if you're not satisfied, if you didn't get out of this what you expected to, then you come and see us afterwards and we'll make it right personally between us and you. All right, 1-1.
Okay. Okay, so GTK Plus is the library that powers GNOME as a desktop. It also powers XFCE as a desktop. It also powers the new Nokia N770 as a desktop, or whatever, and powers the new One Laptop Child XO Sugar interface as a desktop. GTK is actually a very powerful library. It's based on some perhaps older X11 concepts, but I think I'll be okay.
No, we're cool.
But at the same time, it's designed to be cross-platform. It works on Windows, Mac OS, as well as the Linux or free Unix platform. Can you see that?
Yes.
Okay. The difference between GTK's cross-platform and, say, WX Widget's cross-platform is that GTK is using the same widget rendering on all platforms. The native look and feel is then provided by a theme, which means you get the same power that the widgets offer on all platforms. Compare this to something like WX Widgets, which is using the native widget library for that platform. And as a result, you kind of have the only features you can use are features which are a subset of all the widget libraries. So we'll discuss in further why it should GTK. These slides are actually more than I was expecting. We'll go through building UI, we'll discuss box then we'll do some C, some Java, and some Python. We're not going to start at the beginning in each one, so we'll start from the beginning in C. We'll kind of gloss over the beginning in the next two languages, and then we'll, because you don't want to see us start the same application three times, and to be honest, we don't want to do it.
On the other hand, we're like being really audacious here, and we intend to write the apps in front of your eyes. And that's on purpose. Hopefully, this will result in speed being such that you can sort of grok what's going on and mull it over. Usually what happens in tutorials like this is that somebody throws up some finished piece of code that's had 4 hours of debugging in it. You go, oh yeah, it's easy, see? And well, APIs are easy when you already know what you're doing and you're looking at documentation or code as a reference. But when you're first learning something, then it can be kind of tricky. And that's sort of the audience that we're trying to speak to here. If you're already a GTK ninja, then we appreciate you hanging out. But this tutorial is for people that want to learn fresh. And the reason we're doing three languages is because I couldn't think of a better way to drive home the message that it's GTK itself, the concepts that are important, and the implementation in each of these three languages doesn't matter so much. And you'll see the same themes again and again, and then just different stylistic things. That maybe, depending on your own background, different approaches will be suitable to you. Oh, score. Nice.
Okay, so... So why would you choose GTK? We went through the fact it's multi-platform, it's fast, it's flexible, it's ubiquitous, it's on every single Linux distribution that ships today. Maybe with the exception of Smoothwall, but not every single real Linux distribution that ships today. It's available on every platform you could ever want. As well as just C, Python, and Java, the languages we're going to cover, they're fairly major languages nowadays. Here's a list of some of them. This isn't a complete list of languages that GTK is available in. So C, C++, Ruby, Haskell, C Sharp, PHP, OCaml, Eiffel, Erlang, Wild, Scheme, Lisp, Lua, Octave, Tickle, Smalltalk.
Okay, that's like a really rad ringtone. That was your camera shutter sound? That's even weirder.
It's also available in Ada and Pascal and Fortran, and but you know, how else are we gonna get?
Prologue?
I still here.
Prologue.
It might be, I don't know.
No. The reality is that some on this list are well maintained, some have kind of atrophied and bit rot, and one in particular is being reinvented.
It's licensed in the LGPL. So if you're writing free code, fantastic, great, that's exactly what we want. We're a free culture, a free software culture. But at the same time, if you're writing apps for the commercial interest that you do intend to market, and perhaps your company isn't comfortable yet with releasing their source code, or for some other reason would choose not to release their source code, that's okay too, you're within the bounds of the license. So, these are quick word of versions. This is what is probably...
I'd like to say one thing. Most of the talks are going to focus on GTK because in learning GTK, you'll also get an entree to how to use the rest of the GNOME APIs because they're built with the same building blocks. But one comment I would make about GNOME as a whole is it's actually not just GTK that's LGPL, but pretty much the entire GNOME stack is LGPL or even more liberal. And the reason I make a note of this is that it's perhaps of interest that... I have network access, and that means you do too. So, go nuts. Get your email. So, crush the network. The reason that I took my back is just a little tidbit that I learned a couple years ago at WADEC is Nokia, when they made the 770 device, the 770 device, they went with the GNOME stack instead of the Qt KDE stack because of the fact it was LGPL. Now, that's actually a pretty compelling case of why the GPL is in sometimes a dual license model can work. And you know, sometimes firms will choose to pay a license to you and under the dual license with GPL and you know, get your code so they can use it in a proprietary case. And sometimes people will choose not to use it. I really value the fact that people can make that choice, and I really appreciate the two different business models. It's just interesting in this case to see that GNOME's LGPL culture is one of the things that led Nokia to being now a major participant in the community.
Okay, yeah. So very quick word on versions. This just is what was running on our laptops. These aren't minimum requirements, because I'm now running last week's Ubuntu Feisty, and you're running fairly recent Gen 2, I think. So this should work with any reasonably modern Linux. This worked on my Fedora Core 6 machine.
doesn't really work that way. What tends to happen is that versions older than N are, if not completely abandoned, are generally only going to get really important security fixes, and that's it. Backporting is too hard. On the other hand, GTK 2.10 is just a superset of GTK 2.8, plus bug fixes, plus a few new features. And in general, those new features may have buggy code paths, but the bulk of the library, which has been inherited over the years and that makes up the 2.8 foundation, which we're building, 2.6 foundation, and so on, that just gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And if you look at the release notes for any recent GTK or glib or other library, you'll see that just the low-level fixes to really obscure corner cases in the library just get stronger and stronger. So if all you've got on your machine is GTK 2.8, no problem. If you've got access to 2.10, then there's no reason not to use it. It's not like picking a stable version of the operating system that's been robustly tested out in the world. In free software, you tend to do the latest version is actually usually the most stable. You do have to be aware of what the new features are because those aren't the most stable necessarily, but usually the core gets stronger and stronger. And that applies pretty much up and down that stack.
Yeah, so in short, no, because it's no requirement.
So, having covered some background, let's just get into the meat of this. The design of the GTK, so GTK itself, where did that acronym come from? Well, back in the mid-late 90s, there were a bunch of guys working on a tool you might have heard of called the GIMP. Right? The GIMP is a photo manipulation tool. And back then, there wasn't much in the way of wizard toolkits to use. Has everybody here seen Motif? Right? It's really ugly. Well, the GIMP guys, being graphic ninjas, were like, wow, Motif is really ugly. Let's do our own. Of course, it's wacko and woo-woo, but off they went, and GTK is the GIMP toolkit. And myself, I'll tell you, there's a little personal anecdote. The reason I'm a GNOME guy, KDE guy, is in like circa 97, 98, when I looked at GNOME 1.0 earlier, and looked at some early KDE version, the GNOME applications, the GTK applications, had nice square gray buttons, and the Qt programs had rounded yellow buttons. And I thought that looked really, really sick. So I went with the square gray buttons, and I'm a GTK guy. All you need to know. That's why there's this GTK prefix on all these class names. And when you start seeing some C code, when David starts demonstrating that in a few minutes, you'll start to see that the names get used in different ways, and there's macros and that follow one naming convention, and casts to structures that follow another naming convention. And then you'll see that in the Java and Python side, we ditched the GTK prefix because it got annoying. So you'll see people use the terms interchangeably, and we will today as well. If I talk about a widget, I'm talking about a GTK widget. If I'm talking about a GTK window, and I'm also talking about a window. We're using the terms interchangeably. But if you use a different windowing toolkit in your experience, you'll probably come across similar concepts. The difference here today is sort of how they fit together. One thing that we wanted to show you with this picture was that one of the funny things that computer users actually struggle with, and see this on Windows and on our own free desktops, is that the desktop isn't the top level artifact, right? And nor is the My Computer icon. Like when you click down on Windows or in the computer artifact on a GNOME desktop, it's not actually top. It's buried down here. Desktop isn't home Android desktop, or home game desktop, wherever you are, right? And it's down here, and yet it's a high level artifact. The same thing happens in widgets. I think everybody would understand that an application starts with a window, right? Well, cool with that? Well, window is actually down here. And it inherits all the way from widget, which is the generic thing that is the top of the inheritance hierarchy. That's probably worth noting. GTK is very, very object-oriented. In fact, it's so object-oriented that it's kind of like not even C anymore. The way you use it, you actually have all the power of an object-oriented language available, but they've worked all that up into structures that you can use from the C side. And of course, for the object-oriented languages that have found it, it falls into place really nicely. In fact, it morphed and smoothed off a little bit over the years so that it would actually be, we fit into properly OO languages. And so this is an object inheritance hierarchy.
Yeah. It's worth pointing out in the chart here, it says GTK widget is the top, but the top level object is a thing called a G object. So it's unimportant here, GTK widget is the highest level thing you can put on a screen. G object is the highest level thing you can store data in and use all the GTK object features.
So you'll actually start seeing echoes of that when we pull up documentation pages and we see it in concurrence hierarchies. But just to get you familiar with some of the names we're using off the bat, what I want to show as well is that, and we're going to talk about the packing model that you use to build up user interfaces, obviously. One really interesting difference is that I'm going to be talking about window and button quite a bit, and they inherit from something called bin, and you know, does this even care to be relevant? No, except that bin is a container that only has one child in it, whereas a container generally is something that has many children in it, maybe where many equals one. And so they don't go to a huge level of abstraction. They've only did the abstraction when there was functionality that can pop up. But for instance, bin exposes a get child method, which of course you can't do on container because you know it has to be get children. And so that's why window and button are down here, because a window has one thing in it. And of course, if you want to make something more complex, well, then you need a one thing that has the ability to pack more things into it. And guess what? It's going to be a container. It has one of these things in it. We'll be talking about that in a bit. On the other hand, you've got all kinds of other stuff, which is, and actually this is, there's stuff in between these two, and there's stuff below them. And there's you know, it's not a balanced tree by any stretch. It's somewhat all over the place as a character's hierarchy.
Okay, so building a UI in GTK, you've got a number of options. As it says here, you can write code. The fundamental way to build a new UI in GTK is to write some code. You can then programmatically create custom content. You can programmatically decide how to put your layout together. And it's useful for when you're putting together a smaller widget because it's normally not all the code. So we'll actually show you a demonstration. We won't quite go into depth about what we're doing just yet with the box packing, but so this will be a GTK window with a GTK button in it. GTK/GTK.h. That's fairly straightforward. We're dragging the GTK API into main, into argc, char style start argv. It's a great way to start a program. So we need to, because C, we need to actually allocate some things. So GTK widget star window. That's a pointer to a widget. The pointer we're naming the window, right? When you're writing GTK code in C, even though GTK widget is actually going to be a GTK window, it actually pays to use GTK widget as a type. We can then cast into whatever type we need it to be in for a particular function call, because C is strongly typed. But at least that way, you always know what type every single one of your widgets is. It's always a type GTK widget. It's not something you have to do, but it's a style you'll see many people follow, and it actually keeps you sane. So GTK widget, start off. The only thing we need to do is call GTK init, and argc, and argv. This initializes the type system and half a dozen other bits and pieces. It also reads out your argc and argv vectors so that it can access things like dash dash display if you pass that in the because we fundamentally always wanted GTK window top level, you'll see in other languages, languages that can have polymorphic constructors, that we don't need to provide that. It will provide that by default. C doesn't have that feature, so we have to give it explicitly. So then we'll go button equals GTK button new with label. Hi guys. So we now created a window and a button. We now need to put one into the other. So GTK container add GTK container. So here we're using cast macro. So window. We could use an explicit C cast. We could go bracket GTK container star bracket. So we could do that. But what this other macro gives us is GTK at this point will actually do type checking on our variable for us and actually check the window is actually can actually be of the type GTK container. Because a window inherits from a container, we can use containers functions on window. If it doesn't inherit, GTK at runtime will throw an error saying assertion window is not of type container. So GTK container add, and now that accepts as a parameter of a widget, so we can say button. So we now added the button to the window. The window is a container, so we still have it. We'll discuss why and how this all works in a second. So at that point, our window will be initially hidden, so we need to go GTK widget show all window. Because GTK widget is the class we're using, we don't cast it because it's already of type GTK widget. So we've got the thing, there's a GTK widget show function, which will show a single widget, and there's a function we've used here, GTK widget show all, which will work down the packing tree and show all the widgets that we've packed into that tree. So in this case, the button. The last thing to do is start running GTK main. Okay. So let's open a new tab. So we'll compile it. Actually, we'll put the line up for this in a second. We're not using any of the complicated systems here. I'm just doing this in a single line on the brand line, which, when you're writing very quick or prototype GTK, is the best way to do it. I normally start writing a program like this and using up arrow a lot, and once I get to two files, I'll switch to using a very simple make file. And once I actually want to be serious about it, I'll switch to using a build system.
Okay. So everybody knows that to compile a C file, you have to give a source .c file and -o to give it the name of the target executable. So before you do it, what I'm going to ask David to do is that package config command that he just ran was actually some really nifty voodoo that's built in the GNOME library stack. And so if I ask him to run this command, we'll see what it spits out is a whole bunch of dash L and dash capital, no, just a dash L's, which are all the libraries you need to link against in order to build your program. Now, if you had to figure that out by hand, that'd be really a pain in the ass, right? But the GNOME build stack provides each library that gets installed, installs something called a package config file, it's got a .pc extension, that's just got some variables in it, like what libs do I need? And of course, the voodoo magic to work out what the heck that is on your particular distro is pain and suffering for the people who do the packaging on your distribution, but that's not your problem. And if you do C flags, which is cool, the difference here is all that the includes. And again, finding what the include paths are for all the different libraries that you've got. And incidentally, our slides will be available after this, and there are slides that summarize at least this part of it. And in my case, the stuff is already online in the documentation. So you can dig this stuff out. If you're trying to meditate those about what we're typing.
Okay, so you can see here we've inlined, this is just a shell inline for the package config file. So all these parameters we passed inline to GCC, and hopefully this compiles first time. That's from machine slot. Well, it did. Excellent. So we can run that, ./demo,
this is, and I'll just zoom up one size scale. This is, you see the URL bar, this is developer.gnome.org. And from there, and you can also get there from www.gtk.org. This is where the documentation for a GTK button is. And we were going, do we use a button? Well, we did button new, right? And so the new with label function that David called, it's right here. It says that it takes a constant pointer. And actually, one of the reasons I want to pull this up is to make an observation that GTK, after we refactored a bit, one of the things it's built on is something called glib, not to be confused with glibc. But glib is a generic library that has all kinds of, it's basically a re-implementation of the standard library, if you will. But it has type-safe and portability-safe wrappers for just about everything. So for example, this gcar thing here, probably you follow that link, land somewhere, God knows where. Where we ended up in, there. So what's gcar? Well, actually, it's pretty simply defined as a car, but there are other platforms where it actually might be defined a little bit differently. That's not necessarily the best example, but there are definitely issues with type sizes like unsigned ints, and so they have unsigned int 32 and 64, all done in type-safe and portable ways. That they then, you know, the configure system, when they build these libraries, that's how they achieve portability. So meanwhile, you've got, in this API documentation, you've got all kinds of stuff. And remember I was saying that names show up in different forms? Well, here's GTK button uses a type. Here's GTK button in longhand in the function names, right, the method names. And if we switch back to David's code, there's the stuff that I'll show you. And here are these things as constants and casts are done in capitals. That's kind of old C-style conventions where macros are always done in capitals and so are enum constants. And that's just the way it is. But you know, whether it's GTK widget or GTK widget or GTK something else, the naming pattern is obviously consistent. And that's where all these names come from. So David's obviously an experienced GTK C programmer. But where he dredged this up from and where you can start learning it from, at least for reference purposes, is that API documentation.
So the other thing, if you want to see the API documentation, you don't use the website. This piece is called DevHelp. It's literally, doesn't it says the tin? Oops. So you search here, I want to pick a new button, GTK button new. And you can see down here on the left, here's GTK button new, GTK button new from stock, new with label, new with mnemonic. So it's actually a really good way to search documentation, and it's actually good when you're on planes because then you can't get to the web.
Yeah, this is local on his machine, you know, his web page, but if you install the GTK libraries with the appropriate documentation on, or is it a package on Ubuntu?
It's a package on Ubuntu, and I think it's a package on Debian, and it's a package on Fedora.
It's a doc use flag on Gentoo. Will result in this stuff being installed locally, so that, really, as David was just saying, really helpful when you're offline. But there's the same API reference documentation.
Okay, so we'll go with that. So that's our first example. Is anyone feeling really lost yet? Oh, excellent, wow. Okay, so that was the line used to compile it, except that's actually wrong. We'll fix that before we put the slides online. Take out that lib. Okay. So, back to building UIs. We wrote some code. It required us to know things. It required us to set... Well, it wasn't that complicated yet, but it would get much more complicated if we're going to do anything more involving than a button in the window. So, the second way we can write UIs is to use a thing called Glade. Glade is an interface builder. It's great for building big, complex interfaces. It's even great for building smaller interfaces, or even chunks of interfaces. You can build a chunk of an interface to embed inside another interface. You go absolutely nuts. So things you build don't necessarily have to be put inside Windows. You can simply build smaller, reusable components that get packed into larger pieces. Glade writes out an XML file, a .glade file, but it's literally an XML schema. In the old days, people used to use that to generate source code, which don't do it. In new versions of Blade, the feature's been removed because don't do it.
Well, can anybody think why? Why would you not want to generate? Like, so the fact that all this boilerplate code is, you know, get generated for you, oh, what a cool idea. What's the anti pattern?
You gotta write it by it.
Exactly. And because it, you know, C is you know, compiler readable, but it's not machine readable in the way that XML is. And what happens is the problem is generally an issue known as the round trip problem. You can output the C stuff, but of course, once you start hacking on it and adding your own code to it, can you get back to Glade? No. Right? So people started to realize that having done this prototyper, that actually would be, well, it's James Hinchers is the credit for this, right?
I actually didn't know.
Well, we'll give James Hinchers the credit, and if we're wronging someone else, that's just too bad.
So we'll stop Glade 3.
So what James did, and the term is libglade, are the two things. Glade is the UI designer, okay, which David's firing up right now. And there actually are a couple other tools which output the same XML data. And then this libglade is something we're using in our code in a minute, is something that can read the XML data that comes out of this and do some just wicked magic to create widgets from it live in your application.
Okay, so, yep, a GTK window with a GTK button with Glade. So, this is the Glade UI designer. You see down here on the left, we have, all the widgets we might like to use. If we actually go view, LA appearance, text beside icons, now you can actually see the names. So you can see window, dialog box, about dialog, and then here the container format, so not formats, widgets, sorry, pardon me. And then buttons, images, scroll bars, mostly widgets you don't want to use. You'll also see ones that are marked obsolete, which is still there for compatibility with all applications, but you shouldn't be using them. And you'll see some other ones here that we're not interested in right now, so we'll just collapse those. So, window and a button, we can go, so we get window, bang, shows the window. This monitor is actually by default not quite good enough. So now we've got a window, you can see you've got the stipple pattern. This is obviously a container, so we can place something in it. So if we scroll down, button, click on button, click, bang, there's a button. So you can see here on the right, we actually have the packages.
Why is your interface all in one window?
This is new Glade.
Right.
Old Glade can't do this.
3.0.
Yeah.
Do you want to pull the old Glade?
I am running Glade 3, the 3.0 or not.
I might be running Glade 3.1.
Right.
So this here is Glade 2, which is fundamentally functional, but if you're gonna build UIs now, use Glade 3.
So there's a window, and it's the same conceptual power, but it's I've got nothing against single window interface design. But it's a bit cumbersome because of the fact that you constantly got to keep switching between things that are overlapping each other, and so they switch to a single window that has it all packed together in Glade 3.
There is a way to actually break this apart, but to be honest, it drives me up a wall. I much prefer it like this. okay, so you can see on the right here, up here, we've got the packing. We pack a button into a window. We can give this some text. Oops. Maybe I can actually select that. Yes.
So, I just pull.
So, we actually, that will change. Yes. Okay, so, that's pretty straightforward. You can see here, we've got tabs of properties, well this is actually signals, and properties. So
the business of properties is actually each widget type has a whole, and this is something they inherit from GObject, has the notion of properties. And usually there are explicit functions to set or get as appropriate those properties, but they are things like, tooltips in Glade are some of the verbiage about what the property is for.
Okay. Is this written by introspection?
I believe so. When the types are registered, somebody wrote out this string of code about what the property does, and it's actually registered in the library, but no one ever sees that. And the documentation is a different set of strings, but I think they're getting this right out of the live library, and you could dig for it traditionally and find this text online yourself.
I think it's certainly part of introspection. I think there's a certain amount that you need to define. There's an XML file that defines the library that I'm not entirely sure how it's generated.
There's a lot of food in Blade. If you're a Java person or potentially a Python person, you're thinking introspection, it gets most of the way there, but C itself doesn't give you the tools it needs, so it's a lot of registration and lookup type functions, and there's an enormous amount there. Really what powered most of that was accessibility, actually. That's actually maybe if you switch back to the widget name. So if you look in the inspector, it's showing at the beginnings of widget tree, window one and button one, which are as you know useful names as you can come up with, but whatever. How about even better, the high button? Sure. And you know, why would you pick a descriptive name like this? Why would you even care? One is going to be that actually sometimes you're going to need these names to get the widget out using LibGlade. We'll come to that in a moment. But from an accessibility standpoint, people who are using screen readers, as they move around the screen, they get told the name of the button. You're on the high button, you're on this label, you're focused on something. And I actually kind of feel bad at people who have to listen to this, because I don't think terribly many people pay a lot of attention to these names. But if it's going to be the kind of thing that you think that somebody would have to be using a lot, it's worth a little bit of trouble to write that and other accessibility stuff. Yeah?
Is that a hyphen?
Yes, it is.
Yes. No, that's just what you use. You can use any standard you want, hyphens, underscores, camel case.
Just space it,
no, you can't use space.
Right.
Pretty sure. Well, I've never used them.
There are other places where further metadata can be given to the accessibility kit. In fact, on the accessibility tab, this is where you can put text that is read out to the person. But nevertheless, the keys that are used to identify this widget uniquely is that little label. And so, I made the accessibility comment, but for you as programmers writing your interface, you'll want a name other than label 14, because you're going to have to be looking this up in a minute, and label 14 is just not all that practical.
So, yeah, you can set rich descriptions. The underlying system will try to provide a lot of this for you, so you don't really need to worry about it. But every now and again, you might have a widget that's been used in a non-standard way. It's not so much relevant to this discussion, so we're not going to spend time with it. Okay, so we can save this file. Save it there. Button, that's the name. So we can see here the other name, high button. Properties we've set. And you can see the other property we set there. So you don't normally need to read this. Every now and again, if you're doing revision control and you get a collision, in revision control, you might end up having to go to the XML and manually merging.
And part of the reason that we started with it, you know, archetypical simple button and window examples, at least you can rock this for a moment. One of the things that Blade does for you is it does really elaborate prep packing, and these files can get huge and monstrous. So this is not the kind of thing you have by hand, but nonetheless, that's how the data gets translated, and you can start probably seeing how there's enough data here to start for you know a really intelligent tool to start building an interface with this information.
Okay, so we'll switch this to using libblade. /include blade/glade.h. We want to put in the Glade API. Let's take out all that and that. Okay. So now we need to grab a handle to the Glade resource, which you see, let's go to my reference guide. Glade XML new. So you can see here's the function we're going to use to return the Glade XML handle. after we do our initialization, XML equals glade XML view demo1.glade. If we go back to that documentation, it requires a file name, which we've just given it. It requires the root of the tree for where you want to start working. So in our case, that was window 1. And it requires this thing called a domain, which we won't worry about now. This is for translation. Glade interfaces are fully translatable in any language you want. The GNOME build system, if you use a full build system, can read Glade files, generate the PO files in for translation, and then the translation team can come through and do their work. So you actually can just pass null for default. You pass null for the default here as well. So the first null means we go from the top of the tree, and we'll build all parts of the tree, and the next one means we want the default translation domain, semicolon. So at this point we've created a Glade resource. It'll be constructed by the system. It goes away for however long it actually requires to do this work. We can put window 1 there. So we can also do window 1 here. We can also do hide button. If we only want to create that single button, we can just grab the button. So say we had, I mentioned before, we could build a component to reuse. We could pass the top level of that smaller component, construct numerous copies of it, and then pack them as we see fit.
You can actually go one further. Some people put multiple windows into a single Glade file. I tend not to do that, but I do tend to, if a window has a few dialogue windows that go with it, I tend to put the dialogues in that file. Sometimes it makes things easier, but then you could pop it up without doing a lot of manual work to create it.
So we need at this point we've got a handle to our Glade resource. Because we're still called GTK widget show all, we need a handle to our window. So Glade XML get widget, we pass the Glade XML file. Requires a reference to Glade XML and it requires a name. So the name we want is window 1. And now we have an actual widget reference. We can show it, we can call the main loop. So we'll just call it out.
How much does Glade understand like when you put additional windows into an XML file?
I build applications that have all my windows in one XML file and then I individually construct them here. I individually construct them here, one by one, because that way I only construct the ones I need at any one time, because it's going to keep my memory requirements down that way.
How much does the GUI understand that?
Sorry?
The GUI, does that understand?
The Glade GUI? The Glade GUI has
no
trouble.
So we'll add more.
So we'll add another one just to show it. Yep. So you can see here, window 1, window 2. So we'll just quickly compile this, and then we'll probably take a very quick break. So we've got a resource to our, we've got a handle to our XML resource, we've got a handle to our GTK window that's in there, we've saved it. Goes here, goes that, go up a bit. At this point here, you're going to be libglade-2.0, because we want to grab the required libraries and include flags for that. Package config will actually, at that point, when you pass multiple things like this, it will actually collate those, so it will pull the common ones forward and the specific ones back. So it actually will look at the dependency order required to build against a certain library, and at that point, it will try and make the compiler do the right thing.
In this case, it actually goes one further. Libglade depends on GTK, and it'll pull all the GTK dependencies in one way.
So we could in fact do that. We could drop GTK plus, and you'll see it still compiles. If we had a look at that package file very, very quickly, you can see it requires GTK plus-2.0.
Which was the blurb string that we were at atomic package config pull in the previous line.
Okay, so we can now run our demo again. And you can see it's actually changed the relief property by accident. It doesn't have any relief, but there's our button. And it still behaves the way you expect.
So what can you just see that?
the advantage of Blade as well, which is worth mentioning, is if we just want to change a property now, we don't have to do any work, we don't have to recompile. So if we want to change small things, where's the button border relief? We actually want to turn that back to normal. Window now, the button is normal, save, go back across my terminal, no recompilation, and now it's got a normal button relief. If anyone was confused with the button relief, it's just the embossing around the button. You see now it's embossed, I mean, if button relief none, then it was just a flat surface. Say if you're using the build toolbar, yes?
Well, one question, I've used Blade a little bit. Can you, for example, if you've got all your widgets using horizontal boxes, is there any way instead of saying, okay, these are horizontal now, but convert them to vertical?
You want to turn them around?
Yeah, or any case where the widget actually, one could say isomorphic, where, okay, I was doing it this way, but okay, I want to be doing it this way.
We'll discuss some packing in a second. I don't think exactly what we want to do is possible yet.
So give us 4 minutes, and we ask you a question then.
Okay, so we'll actually kill that. So do you want to take that break now?
No, let's just do packing. And then we'll take a quick break, and then we'll do signals as
we
like.
We don't want to run out of DVDs. So. Okay, so yes, you can use write code, you can use Glade, or you can do both. You can have Glade files where you programmatically add widgets inside that. You can have programmatically created windows that you add chunks of Glade files into. Because Glade, like the objects created by Glade, are the same objects you use in GTK, you can mix and match. So you can create complex components inside a programmatic dynamically created widget, or you can have dynamically created widgets inside a much more complex window. So
we finally jump forward to the fact that what kind of layout engine does GTK use? I'm not going to elaborate what other systems do, you either know them or don't care. But in GTK, you use something that's known as box packing. And very simply, you've got a lot of widgets that give you the ability to do layout by packing things into other widgets. And they composite up from larger down to smaller. But you have one of the things that sometimes sends people for a bit of a loop is that you kind of have to, if you're going to write an internationalized program, you have to let go a little bit. And some people are trying to make the ultimate uber cool XMMS. Like, you know, funky shapes and everything else to be the most wicked cool Leap user interface you've ever seen. That may be wicked cool and Leap, but it's not very usable because the buttons are so bloody small and you can't actually hit anything because the targets are so tiny. And worse, it's not translatable and internationalizable because, for example, if you switch from English, which is a left to right language, to Hebrew or Arabic, which are right to left languages, the entire user interface needs to change. And the GNOME libraries and the translation infrastructure that's inside them support that really, really well. But one of the things that you have to accept is that maybe hello in English is going to be blah, 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 in Swahili. And that's just a long word, right? And so the box packing model includes the notion of size request and size allocation. Widgets, as they get packed in, they request a certain size based on how big the labels and content is in them. And they reshape and are morphic. That when David was dragging the edge of that window around and resizing that button got bigger or smaller. Well, it did have a minimum size, which is pretty sensible, you know, how much size do I need to be the window. But there are, in the packing model, there are places where you can specify that I want the children of this box to get all the extra space allocated to me or not. And that's actually where you handle the business about growing. To answer the question about sizes, we're serving up something that's going to be about.
Okay, here. So here's an example. This is a new standard GTK window pack. So we'll actually do that.
So we're going to introduce a couple new widgets, which are the really important one is VBox and HBox. And these, when we talk about box packing, we end up using these a lot. Think about the OK button, okay? And the cancel button in every single dialog. That seems like it's one widget, but it's actually a composite of several things. It's a button that contains an HBox. Let me draw it. Default stock OK button is actually HBox that has two things in it, and room to add more if you needed to. It's got two things in it. One is a GTK image with this kind of checkmarky symbol, and the other is a, so that's image, and here is a label. Appears to be a simple one element, oh, you click the OK button, it's actually built up from pieces using, in this case, HBox. And it's probably set so that, when you get into the details of the various properties you can set, you can control how it expands. But basically, that's behavior.
Okay, so we do this example.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do that one real fast, please.
This one real fast. So window 2, we've already set this up. We wanted to create a VBox, so a vertical box, click. Number of items, 3. So you can see here, that's a little bit smaller, so it fits. 3 items, then here, number of items, 3. So we can change it, we can turn it up, we can turn it down, and it's going to figure it out. So we want to. Would you mind if I just go back to the smaller one? Because otherwise, I think there's like icons only. It's actually easier to find it. So label, add a label up here. So we can do that, we can fiddle some properties, we can bend the angle if we want to. Yeah, we can go a bit nuts. Okay, so then we can pack in an HBox, we can have 3 items again, we can drop some buttons in. Button 1, button 2.
There's actually something called HButtonBox, which is specifically for the bottom row of dialogues, and it knows how to put the buttons in the right space and not have them dragged out huge like they are here. But doesn't that, if you have a UI reason, have a great big square to hit, like for example this thing right in front of me, which has got numerous buttons, you can do it this way.
Is that a new widget?
Which one?
HButtonBox.
No, that's been around a long time.
It's one of the ones you don't tend to see because it's one of the things the dialogue already has packed into it, and you just tell it, which stock items you want.
So we can in fact then fiddle with these box packings, which then we don't want to expand it, make it as small as possible. We don't want it to fill any allocation space at all, which actually put the right one. So we can also say we don't want to expand this one, we don't want to expand this one. So now you see that I don't fill up the entire space.
Because they were packed in with setting don't take all the additional space, that's why there is free space over here.
So presumably that can pack to the right as well?
Yes. Okay. So that works, and this is something that was going to come up. In the API, you'll see when it's a bin widget, you can just add it to it. And actually, any container you can add a child to it, it'll add on the end. But the boxes add the notion of pack start, they call it, and pack end. So in the case of a horizontal,